prayer, I guess. I mean, I'm looking at a video here where a Russian engineer who runs a drone manufacturing company or development company is talking about the war. And how it is so clear that, well, at some, that it so easily happens that people in organizations and in countries or whatever get stuck and kind of lose contact with reality. And what that means, I'm going to get into here. I will put it like this. Let's say you have an organization. Well, it might be a country, or it might be a company, or it might be whatever, a religious group. And it has to be managed, led by someone. Now, then you have that society or that group, or where that the society where that group exists in, maybe, how to put it, not at its sharpest. Maybe they had a comfortable life for a long time and just used to everything working on its own. But actually it's working by the hard work of the workers and engineers and all those people in the background. But leaders then, you know, what are you going to become in your life, young man? Well, I think I'm going to become a politician, leader of society. That sounds cool. So then they set out on that, or whatever. I mean, religious group, company, I want to be up there somewhere. Or if it's not for my own personal ambition, it's I care. This is wrong. That is wrong. It should be this. It should be that. And then I have the chance here to climb up to a leadership position. And in these democratic societies, and also in non-profits, I would say, it's easy to climb that way, not necessarily by, how to say, proven qualification. I mean, I heard top military colonels in the US Army speaking on YouTube openly, and I mean, if you're a big top military man, of course I think they're retired, openly criticizing the generals of the US Army, which are, you know, who are higher up in command, in the command chain, for being completely, well, they use even heavier words than unqualified, stupid. And they say that what happens today, this is just an example, in the US military, is that people, they go the military path, so to speak, in universities and schools, military schools, and some of them never saw combat at all. They're kind of academic militaries. And I can imagine, understand that can be really a world, isolated world in itself. where you can live, just like in the academic world, you can live your life hardly much in contact with the world, the outside world, which is the real functioning existence that people we have to deal with. So you can lose contact, and it's the same in religious groups, churches and so on, that you maybe even highest risk there, because there you are, by the very definition of your group, often encouraged to or even pushed to break with the outside world, and they are lower and we are higher and we are pure and they are dirty and so on. Sometimes you hear that from the leadership of such groups, and then you risk losing contact with the working society existence and reality, quote unquote, out there, right? So again, I'm talking very much group psychology here in general. So then you rise up to a high leadership position. And I would say that these are the politicians we have today here in Europe, and I think also in the US. They work themselves up there through careers and knowing the right people, and sometimes having a rich daddy or rich sponsors who help you get up there. And there are always power people in the background who you might meet at a party, and they say, you know, you do this and you do that for me and I'll help you to become president or whatever. Which means that you are there with people sometimes in the top leadership positions who don't know their job. They don't have any work experience. I think someone said, you know, this, whatever his name was in the previous US administration, was always talking, and I think he was probably, there were a couple of them, probably more influential than the president, who was senile. Blinken and who else? Someone said that I wouldn't let this man work in my company, or a military man say, you know, I would not let him be an officer in my. Under me, I mean, you see what I mean? So, and I think this is important because it can be applied to different things, like running a country, running a spiritual group. anyway.
And yes, so here you have the great leader, democratically elected or whatever, picking his or her own men and women around them. It's my team here. Same academically educated career people. And then reality hits. Problems to deal with. This and that. Economic, military, political, of all kinds. Natural disasters. I mean, that's what it's about, being a leader. You have to deal with these and you have to do it successfully. If there's a disaster, a flood or whatever, you have to be out there. Like in China, when there was the Sichuan earthquake, immediately there were military all over. That's what they used their soldiers for in China, first of all, to protect the people, right? That's what soldiers are for. In India, they had this word kshatriya, which means that a protector, not just a warrior running around fighting with others, and flexing cool weapons and all of that, but actually heroic defenders and protectors of the people. And speaking about China, yes, if you actually learn Chinese history, you learn that their defense system, their military system, is exactly that, defensive. You know, they built this Chinese wall. Why do you think they built that? If you walked on it, you understand it's significant work to build that thing. Because they were defensive and they still are. So that's what armies and military should be used for. They should not be used as customers for the military-industrial complex to make lots of bucks. Or salesmen, or whatever you want to call it, distributors. Well, consumers, I would say. So, my point here is that if you find yourself in such a group, whether it's an organization you're a member of, or it's a country you live in, or it's a planet you live on with a humanity, and you find that things are not working out well, the house you live in is not taken care of properly, the society you live in. Well, you know, I used to live in a communal environment for like 20 years or so of my life, so I know. And we saw it. Sometimes, well, sewage system is not working. Sometimes there's no electricity, or it's cold in the winter, or this or that. Food is bad, or whatever. There is no food. Because we were all working for the, well, this Krishna consciousness movement. We were all working, nuns and monks and similar, very ideal non-profit workers. We worked for no salary, and we just got what we needed, food and clothes and place to live. And, well, people criticized the Krishna consciousness movement for being a cult, with some leader up there on top, people imagine, who grabs all the money and all that. Well, I can tell you from first-hand perspective since I was even in a leadership position there, that that didn't really, no, it wasn't like that. We all started by washing pots in the kitchen and cutting vegetables and serving down there and being humble. That's the first lesson. It's a spiritual movement. It's supposed to be a movement, but yes, well, part of why I'm saying this is that as soon as there's a group of people, then things like that I'm talking about today may happen. So, and when it happened, when things didn't work out around us, which of course hit us, the ordinary ones, people down on the ground, then, well, sometimes they told us it's our fault. But generally, I learned at least that we should look up there in the leadership. Is that leader or those leaders actually qualified? And with qualified, I don't mean are they chanting 16 rounds and going to the programs and up to the standard, spiritual standard, which is, of course, one thing that they should be, spiritually mature and enriched, but that such qualification manifests itself also in practical action and beingness, that one is kind, one is honest, one is listening, one is compassionate, and is a friend of every living being, you know. One has to have the qualities that correspond to the position one is in. Whether, like in India and in Krishna Conscious Movement, people talking Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. And I reserve the right to be a bit skeptical to that implementation or understanding, which easily turns into just another mundane caste system. But if you are in that position of being a priest or an intellectual or a spiritual guide or a master, a leader, a teacher, then that's the first qualification, to actually be such a person, to have those personal qualities which are mentioned all over in the Shastra, the scriptures. 25 qualities, or how many were there, of a Vaishnava, the qualities of Brahmana there in the Bhagavad Gita. And you know, the Tikshava Karunika, Asurida Sarvadenam. And it's a beautiful person we find there described. And that beautiful person is the sadhu, the Brahmana, the one who knows Brahman, the spiritual. So that person who is in that leadership position in your group or for you, does that person manifest those qualities? I mean, that's how we need to look, not just because someone is in a position with a title, whether put there by others or climbed up there by that person's own doing. That's not relevant. The relevance is that person qualified? And if you say then, because you have been taught that someone who is in that position with that title, who everyone else worships, then you just fall in with that congregation, that worship crowd. Yes, our great leader is wonderful. Because, you know, you don't dare to say anything else. I mean, we've seen it so many times over and over, from the political level to the religious level to the, I guess, sports teams and everywhere. Group psychology. Groupthink, that's what it is. And we need to be aware of that because, well, some people feel more comfortable living like a herd of sheep. But if that herd doesn't have a good herdsman or herdswoman, or someone who pretends to be but is actually a wolf, then it won't really end well for them and for you and me. That's why I'm talking this. So please give me some time. Anyway, this is my observation that, and it's very practical. If it doesn't work out, if the leader doesn't do his or her job, meaning making, first of all, the own country strong and healthy and clean and people happy and satisfied, everyone has some place to live and something good to eat and some money in the pocket, they can enjoy life, which most people are satisfied with in modest ways. It's not that impossible to run a society or a group that way, especially, I would say, with spiritual societies, because the members there are trained to and are have actually joined it to be less materialistic and more satisfied with a simple lifestyle and all of that, which puts an even greater burden of responsibility on the leaders to not exploit them, abuse or treat them unfairly or impersonally and carelessly, intolerantly. I would say, you know, it's a very dangerous thing to do if you are in that position. And I mean, I was in that such a position of a temple president here in the Krishna Conscious Movement in Sweden, and I understood that when you are in such a position, you got to get real about yourself. Not just sit there and think, now I'm great and everyone follows me. But here are things we need to take care of. I mean, we had there, remember, a big house, like the big house we have here in Brahmakunna. It actually came about, me and Lord Chandas, we bought it for ISKCON Gothenburg. And, you know, here are like 20, we're in a restaurant, which also at the same time we bought, big one, as big as the one Govinda's here in Stockholm. And there I was in charge of all of that. Temple president, it really meant in charge. And you have a board there and they should... Well, there are things that have to be done. Hey, there are rats in the restaurant. Hey, there's a leakage here and there. Hey, the health department came and they demanded some improvement in the ventilation. Otherwise, they closed down your restaurant. Hey, one of our tenants' kids put a cage of rabbits in our garden and they escaped. Yes, you could then see the temple president together with someone else running around. In the colony lot, as it is called, next to our garden chasing rabbits. You know, that's the reality of it. Or you actually learn how to delegate. And I heard someone say, oh, I'm going to delegate, no problem. You do this. And you take care of this entire field of responsibility. It's now your responsibility. And the guy feels honored, takes up that, and doesn't know how to do it. Because he realizes, gosh, you need to have some expertise and some knowledge here. An experience of managing and this and that. So he does something wrong, but he doesn't, you know, dare to say or admit or whatever. And then the big leader comes to, oh, you're doing everything wrong, you're useless, I better tell you how to do it. And then he tells, but he doesn't know either. Micromanagement starts. And there you have the big leader probably firing that. I mean, how many times I saw this, the temple commander working under the temple president. By grandiose delegation ceremony or whatever. No, generally just you do this. And then failing, and oh, he's useless. And then that temple commander, if he's or she is tough enough, will fight back, make a political party, maybe even attempt to take over, which happened. I can tell you details, but I won't now. I'm talking about Scandinavia here mainly. I've got some experience with all of these things. And of course, that's part of why I'm talking it here as Priyavrata, because it's really a Priyavrata topic. But it's, I would say, universal. We need to see that. It's very good and healthy to see that and plan and structure our whatever it is, movement, organization, whatever, to deal with that fact. And I would say, if you ask me, I'm a Swede. I worked at a company for 7 years that produce and sell dentist equipment here in Sweden. One of the biggest, which was in turn owned by a mother corporation, and which is owned by another one, and there's one super rich guy on top of it all. So you could say a well-established, old Swedish, well-working company. And I kind of made friends with the CEO there. He's, you know, we have this called flat company structure in Sweden, which is respected internationally because Swedish managers, Swedish company CEOs and so on, are often respected as very qualified and successful. So he, who then after a while was CEO not only of this company but of a couple of other companies, he was just walking around among us as a friend, was just one of us. No one thought of him as anything big. It's just Jonas. So how are you doing here and how are you doing there? And in each department of the company, there was one very qualified manager sitting, completely managing that department under, you know, on his or her own, and being good at it. Some been sitting there for 30, 40 years. their whole life working with that. They knew what they were doing. And there were some ladies sitting there with computer screens, one of those 1 meter wide ones with a spreadsheet that stretched a meter on horizontally, filled with data that they understood perfectly what they meant and how to deal with them. And I tried to help them with their really messy administration computer software, which is often old and completely outdated in many companies. And they knew how to handle it. So this company, everyone were friends. They used to hang out even after job. And I'm not saying that they were, they're still there. You can go and visit them if you want and look at how it works. Of course, some liked each other, some didn't, and personal relationships there. But job is being accomplished effectively. And the know-how, the competence, is where it should be. None of those people knew everything about how the company should run, but they knew about their specific department very well. And that company, especially that CEO, I would say he's from Gothenburg, from my home area in Sweden, down there. And we could talk. These people are very relaxed and, you know, not making a big person out of themselves, which Stockholm guys often do. Rather than, now I'm getting into this, but whew, this is my channel, so you better, I've got to take it. It's a story. Which is important for me because I was 60 when I got my first full-time steady employment with a salary, where I even had this protection from being fired. And I was in that real Swedish, secure, sheltered, comfortable, but yes, working environment. And it was very interesting. But the very fact, well, I'll tell you that other story, speaking about leadership. In Sweden, there is or was a law that said that if you employ someone younger than 27 years old, then you get less social fees as an employer. So my then wife, she took a university education for HR, human resources. And that's what she wanted to be, a human resources, what do you call it, representative or worker. Then she was successfully finishing her education and should then practice at a company where she were put directly into the position of HR, making interviews with people seeking employment. And after a few weeks, she did such a good job that they listened to her to make decisions of who should be employed or not. And she was told that they should only employ people under 27 years of age. Now, then after that, normally she would get that job, that HR job, because they needed one. to do that. So she was kind of on practice to check, to test it. And she was like 40 something. And she didn't get a job because she was over 27. So, I mean, this is how it works sometimes. But why I got into this now is that I got a job when I was 60, 61 maybe even, my first job full-time. Very good job. Which was like unthinkable, it is. Almost, I mean, people at that age, they say, just forget it, you won't get a job. And I applied for a job as a driver for that company, but happened to send, to enclose my CV, where they saw I had a significant computer education and professional computer systems. So they said, well, that CEO called me up on my mobile. I had my kids in the car driving them home. And, hey, you applied for a job as a driver, but I see that you're overqualified for that. So wouldn't you like the job as high-level X-ray support technician? Sure, okay, I can do that. A guy, 60 plus, and he explained to me, or I understood, that this was smart because by employing people who are older, well, you can easily get people with not only school, you know, education, but with long job experience. People, you know, and I would say experience is just so much more important in these fields, technical fields and so on, than just education. Real life out there on the floor is, you know, different thing than in school. So, and we won't quit. The youngsters, they're climbing up the stair, you know, the ladder, higher position, better job somewhere. So it was intelligent. So what I wanted to say with all this story, I mean, it's just, it's a real life story at least, is that this is Sweden. We have this culture. Well, that's why we are good at football and hockey and all that. We used to be team sports. We are not like the Americans, where it's pyramids, skyscrapers with upwards mobility, as we call it, climbing, career ladders, winners or losers. You know, that it's not Swedish culture, it's not Swedish tradition, and I don't like it. We don't like it. But now I'm speaking here about groups in general, even then spiritual groups or religious organizations, whatever. And you find the same principle there, because that principle, again, it's about how groups work together, how they become organized. And yes, some will tell you then that, well, Prabhupada said that, or he established so that there should be this top person there who's representing the disciplic succession and representing the master. And then there's a chain of command coming down there. And there, you can always find quotes to support your ideas. But I think, frankly speaking, that, well, we can argue that because, for instance, the GBC, I'm not going to get much into this now, but was originally, if you look at the Gaudiya mission established in West Bengal by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they started something they called the GBC, as a kind of coordinating council, just as the word tells it, right? A council between 64 different branches, which was then were then established at the founding, more or less, of this Gaudiya mission, which the ISKCON Krishna Consciousness Movement is one branch of, I guess 65th or whatever. And of course, those who want to serve the mission of Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they are part of that. This is our family, so to speak. And we shouldn't fight within that family. Come on. But yes, the GBC there, as far as I understand it, and someone may have a different opinion, you're welcome, let's discuss it, had that role of, yeah, let's have these 64 branches, representatives from them, meet now and then in this great body commission, council, okay, it's a commission, and whatever that means, council probably. Anyway, I'm just me talking here. So, it's a long time ago I was really into that world. Some memories sometimes. Well, so it was not a top government up there on top of the pyramid. It was more like the connection between the different branches. So they still follow the same, on the same trunk, follow the same mission that was established there originally by the founders, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So when you understand it that way, it makes sense. Actually, I think the Great Body Commission, the GBC, should exist on that level as a unifying cooperation, teamwork, council or whatever for all the branches of the Gaudiya mission. Anyway, that's a little within brackets there, but you see, this is what it gets to when you start talking about these things here. But it's about this what I'm trying to get at. And I'm basically just telling a story because then I found myself, well, a little bit more than my story. I came down to Gothenburg 93 because the one who was in charge there, the temple president of the Gothenburg ISKCON temple, Premarnama Prabhu, wanted to do other things, and which is usually the case. Someone, we were switching along around a lot back then, often because we couldn't really handle it. So after a few years, we had enough of ride out. And so then I had read books about kind of what I'm talking about now. Books written by renowned, what do you say, consultants and experts working for the biggest NGOs, whatever they call them, the non-profits and help organizations and all that. You know, they need good management as well. And they wrote books, how to manage a church or whatever. non-profit. And I read them, inspired by Sridhar, or by Sridhar Swami from Canada and Naveen Krishna Prabhu, who I hope is still around. I don't know if they are still with us. Glory to their initiative, because then I wanted to go there, to Gothenburg. It had a temple that was just the right size, not too big, a building that had been donated to ISKCON. And wherever you are who donated that building, thank you from our niece. You're a real devotee. Although then you got mistreated as so many others who donated. But that's another story. And then there was a small, tiny restaurant, basically a cafe, where we cooked the food in the temple kitchen and shipped it down every day. So, and then a couple of years later, we were there with a 600 or so square meter building in the outside of town in a beautiful area, close to a lake where we could paddle our canoes, and with a restaurant, 350 square meter with like 80, 60 or with something seats in the best restaurant area of Stockholm, and me there finding myself, because I never consider myself a manager or leader that way. Responsible there on top, so to speak, of it all. What I had learned then about this Swedish flat organizational structure, and I wanted, which I then learned then from Sridhar Swami, Naveen Krishna Prabhu, that would work this that way, more like a team. And I don't know how well I succeeded or how happy or unhappy everyone living there were with me and are today with what I did then. But things worked out. It kind of flourished on its own. And I think that this is what happens when, this is my personal understanding here, experience actually, that this is what happens when devotees start working together to serve God. And therefore I think this flat Swedish organizational structure is very well suited for the Krishna consciousness movement. But again, then you may find yourself that, okay, let's have that, and we have a team here running our place. But are those in the team qualified to run whatever they are running? Have they learned how to manage? This is something you go to school to learn. Have they any experience? Have they studied others? Like I had the opportunity to do now when I worked at that company, we're pretty close to the CEO office there. I mean, sorry to say, but I can point to not so far away from here, different projects and, you know, sometimes owning significant properties. That when you look up there in the leadership position, and I, believe me, I have a friend who works, and he's been a devotee as far as I remember, but never moved into the temple. And then he visited Stockholm some couple of years ago. We were taking a walk, and then I learned that he actually works as a pretty top-up manager in the Stockholm city, Gothenburg city, local government there, whatever. In other words, being very, very qualified as a manager. You are generally that if you work in such positions, especially down in that area of Sweden. Here in Stockholm, you can be any, I don't know. But there's hard competition. So, and the way he spoke about and speaks about ISKCON Sweden, when you start talking with him and he dares to say what he thinks, it's very interesting. How obvious it gets when you see things a little bit from the outside, when there is qualified leadership and when there are people there who just, oh, I would like to lead, or I care, or so much problem here, someone has to take on the burden here of leadership, but who don't know how to do it. And then the problem is that if there is even a board or something of such people who don't really know the science and art and, you know, the practical, very, very practical art of how to manage an organization and make everyone in it happy and everything working out. And if they think we do, I mean, everything is fine. Look here, everyone in our community says everything is fine. And they are smiling and they look very convincing. Well, that's the thing. Sometimes they don't dare to say anything else, because then they are thrown out, and this is their home is here, and their children grew up here, and we better comply, line up. So one can fool himself, thinking, I'm great, I'm qualified, what are you talking about? And then, of course, if there's a team like that, you hold each other's, you know, shoulders, and protect each other because you are the team. So even there you can have this. And the problem is, in any case, whether it's one top leader or a team, that if those there, if things don't work, fall into pieces or whatever, just crumbling. And I have to, I mean, I'm old, so I dare to say it, that it is this harsh, if you want it, but this reality of what actually happens down on the floor, so to speak, that decides. And yes, I mean, in Gothenburg, we had problems. But I was happy because I felt it was flourishing. And it wasn't me. It was the devotees working together and Krishna. We could feel it. I mean, I think many of you have felt that or feel that sometimes when Krishna is there and things just almost happen on their own. And sometimes you have the big, fine leadership up there quarreling and or just isolated in their own ivory tower, you know, you down there, you peasants, you don't know anything. I know where things are at. And being kind of, it's dangerous because you can get disconnected from the reality down on the floor where people may be suffering. And then symbolically, if nothing else, the rats come in and take over. Things start crumbling. So, I mean, the reason why I'm taking all this long time for you and for me as well, speaking these words, well, I feel one day I have to say all of this because it's been gathering in my heart and mind for years now. So, and I always found these organizations, or for the past few decades at least, found these organizational issues interesting. I mean, it's challenging how to, here we are, we have something, we have a group, or we have a property, or we have some project. How can we make it work? And yes, there I was in this big temple with this big restaurant. And I remember I went to India and I got salmonella and I was on crutches for a few months in the middle of that, getting both the house and the restaurant. But yes, you need a vegetable cutting machine, you need a dough blender. You need this, you need that for the restaurant. Got hold of a ventilation guy to fix up the ventilation, so we got approved by the health department, and you know, had to be called in as a witness in a court case against him because he got a parking ticket when standing on our parking lot for on a Sunday. I mean, these are the things you need to deal with. I remember sitting there in that court as a witness with a heavy attorney. Questioning me. So, I mean, there I was, little me, because you can feel very little, very small, and you had to be on top of it all. So, well, this is about organization again. What we did, what I learned then, I could pass it on to you youngsters. Why not? It's called strategic planning. I mean, it's a basic thing in organizations, but I learned it from one of those experts in nonprofit organizations. We sat down, all of us, in the temple room after breakfast or something and had a meeting. We call it Ishti Goshti. It's just the Indian Sanskrit word for it. But this one was strategic planning. We had a whiteboard or something like that, and which I had there, and then everyone could come up with ideas for what we wanted to do. First of all, what's the goal of this, you know, the mission statement? What's the goal of what we are doing here? And it's a good question to ask because, and that's the first thing I learned, if everyone agrees on the goal, then, well, hälften vunnet, as we say in Swedish, I guess, half is won. Because more often than not, conflicts within a group, an organization, occur because there might be differences in opinion or expectations of what the goal is that we're working towards. Okay, then, what objectives can we take to, how you use it, to reach that goal, or those, we set up goals, right? We want to do this thing, we want to do that thing, we want to improve the restaurant, it should go to become like that. And we then wanted to build a temple room, beautiful temple room, and so on. And or maybe we had it already, I don't remember, but you know, goals like that. And then next step, and we wrote those, and everyone can come with their ideas, what they wanted, different projects they wanted us to start, and we wanted to together then work with, because everyone was involved with ideas, with everyone involved and with carrying them out. So we had to be realistic. And it's easy to throw out cool ideas, but then when you start discussing how to implement them, then it's a different story. You have to get real. So then the next, okay, these generally, some of them were practical, some were not, and then we prioritized them. The one we're voting and those that everyone wanted most that we put on top of the list. And then we looked at them one after another, maybe starting with one for today, something like that, depending on your time. And then what are the obstacles that we can see occurring here? Well, first, maybe what are the objectives, meaning all the step-by-step measures to take to accomplish that project, tasks, you could say. You can divide a project up, you know, this is a complete project here, and it consists of this work and that thing here, and then who will do what, of course. That's how you do these things. And then you have meetings regularly, those, especially that team of that project, work, you know, how is it going and how to go from here. But then also next step was to identify the obstacles that we could find already now would come up there around the bend. And someone may think this is negative, but rather it's proactive, because then the next thing was how to now plan, being aware of those obstacles, and plan from the very beginning to get around them or to avoid them or neutralize them or whatever. So we're not met by surprises that will then show our work to be 10 times more difficult than we thought and make us discouraged. So planning and thinking in advance, and that's where experience and knowledge becomes important, because some people, they have experience, and some may have high education and experience, just like this Colonel Gregor McDouglas, who I look at YouTube, U.S. Army colonel. He was there in Iraq, and he was really on the front line. When he speaks about military matters, such as the wars here and there in the world, it's a completely different thing than some academic who just learned in school. And it's very, very valuable to hear such a person. And he, first of all, emphasizes over and over again, don't work for more war, work for peace. Try to avoid war. I mean, that's the real, I would say, military experts saying such a thing. And you find it there, you know, in the old Chanakya pundit, and what's the name? His name is in China, these old books of war. First step is to avoid war. So, I mean, these kind of practical experiences that some people have is very valuable, because such a person can see he has done it before. It's not a big super-duper person there with head full of theoretical facts. Someone who had done the same thing or similar things that you are trying to do now before, and who knows all the obstacles and how to get around them. So I realized for me, because I wasn't an expert in, there were so many fields I was not an expert in. What did I do? Well, I went to experts and I spoke to them and asked. You can go to a carpenter, you know, owner of a carpenting company, you know, building guys, and ask, how do I do this? How do I renovate this room here? We needed to take down a wall to make a bigger temple room. Well, what do you do? Well, I call up a building engineer. There are those who are experts in and offering their services for that, those purposes of inspecting buildings. And yes, you want to take down a wall. How thick does that beam have to be up there in the ceiling to take the load from the upper apartments, upper floors? They know this, And when you come to these points, it's critical to have such people. So then that's the way, and I would say, and the reason I'm talking so much about it is that this is the way I found my CEO there in the DAB Dental, as it is called, the Dental Corporation. Yes, you are expert. You are expert. He found experts in different fields. And yes, I was an expert in that field which he employed me for. And I had worked with it all my life at that. In ISKCON, I took care of computer systems and I did database development. And I was a certified database administrator on Oracle, if you know what that is. Almost, at least. But I had that education. So he knew how to find good people, whether they were inside or outside of their organization. But in ISKCON, sometimes we didn't want to go to those outside because they were just dirty carmies. But I did. And I was driving around there in many different, there were like three or four places where you could buy secondhand professional restaurant kitchen equipment. This was like my pilgrimage route. Check out, oh, look, they got a cheap vegetable cutting machine here. Let's buy it. And you get it for like a fifth of or a third of what they would cost new. So that's also part of it, how to keep costs down without wasting money on crap. How to buy secondhand things without buying things that don't that break next day. So, I mean, things you learn by doing it. And now there are a few of us sitting here, just to get back to reality, who have the same experience. I have run three companies by now. Last one was a shareholding company. I maintain our family, my part of our family on it at least. I provided my share. As well, anyway, that way, and there are a few of us who went through all of that and learned by our mistakes and by asking others. Like, for instance, I'm doing this video, I have my little home studio. Much of what I have here and what I'm doing and what you see is what I learned from actually a TV professional that I made friends with, and we even shared office and a studio just kilometer away from here for a couple of years, Gunnar Nilsson. And I realized that when you learn from the professionals, actual professionals, it's so valuable, not because some people think professional means something fancy and expensive and this and that, but it really means, you know, these people, they need to get things done quickly and rightly, efficiently, because it's their income, you know, their working hours. They need to get lots of done. They get paid per hour and they need to get a lot of things done, or paid per project more often. So that's really what I found so valuable. And now we're sitting, a few of us, and we are older, we are pensioners, I'm 17 soon. We don't have that energy and passion to start and run big far-out projects. But we can be here and provide knowledge and, to some extent, practical expertise based on experience, the school of hard knocks in general. So, well, I'm here, I offer my services in that way. And I, just so it's clear, was never and is not and will not want to be some kind of, you know, top level there on the pyramid guy. And I really, as I think, I hope I have been able to convey here, believe in and want to work in teamworks like this. And I emphasize, I'm quite convinced that this is a good, at least here up in Scandinavia, a good organizational structure, so to speak, for the Krishna consciousness movement, the projects, the properties that should be taken care of for Krishna and for the devotees, not for me who sit here on them, for my glories or for my home or whatever, for my family. But hey, it's all Krishna's, it's all the devotees, especially those who built it all through the years. So it's a good idea to step down the high horses, because eventually Krishna will take us down from them anyway. We'll die if nothing else. Which, of course, means just leaving this service for another one. So, yeah, I mean, let's be practical and realistic here. And I also learned another one from those books by the expert. Trainers for managers, that a good leader is the one who makes him or herself unnecessary, not needed anymore. And I would say there's a lot in that, and that's, I think that's my boss there in this dental company. He must have read that. He must have learned that, because, yes, after a while he could just step up to higher responsibilities in that bigger corporate concern that he worked in, and put another CEO there who had an easy time to get into, because most people already knew, sometimes even didn't even notice if there was a CEO there or not. So I said, that's advanced, that's something to learn from. And I remember Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, he wrote, we used it on a record cover, on a Rasa record, the inside sleeve there, you know, an article that he wrote, maybe it was several pages, I was part of producing that specific one. I maybe translated it or something, and typeset and layouted it. He wrote an article there which was about these, yeah, four classes like that. And he said that it was at least an interesting little, if not anything else than poetic way of putting it, that, how was it? For Vaishyas, what was it? For Shudra, for the working class, there's communism. That makes sense. For the Vaishya class, the merchants and farmers and those producing the value and who the workers work for, capitalism is what they want and what works among them. And then the leaders, the politicians up there, the power people who have to control the society, make everything work out and so on. The best system, maybe not many are admitting it, but they would like most is basically fascism. Authoritarianism. Look, you know, we need some power here to do the good thing here and keep things in order. And I guess that is the fascism thing comes from those people, right? It was not really something that the workers invented. But the brahmanas, the intellectuals, for them anarchy is what works and what they prefer. In other words, they need to be free, independent, not controlled by someone up there. But also, we have learned that the Vaishnavas, who are then, you know, said to be even above the Brahmanas because they are simply devotees of God, they can truly have that, not anarchy, but a sister and brotherhood corporation working together without the need of me controlling you, me bigger than you, you smaller than me, and so on. And to do that, we learn it from, I just mentioned to God brother, your friend, the other day, yesterday, and he said, have you read Jiva Dharma? Yes, a little bit at least. And yes, you have there, this is a book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, about the lives of Vaishnavas in West Bengal. Couple of hundred years ago or something, I don't remember which time frame it was there, but and they didn't have big organization with heads there, king over them, among them. They were just hanging out there together, living there together, each one in his home, and meeting and talking about Krishna. And being friends. And this is also the way I see that actually ISKCON should be. And then, well, if you just, you know, still listen, then why not? That again, when you read the 7 points there in Prabhupada's, what he wrote when he founded ISKCON, it's a movement to bring the devotees closer to each other. And I say it's a movement, an organization, a society meant to serve its members, not the other way around. If you agree with me on that, then this is going to be easy to understand. But then, it shouldn't be a country with king and ministers and all of that trying to make a country in the country. A little country called ISKCON inside this country called Sweden, which then by its very definition would be in an antagonist position towards that country that it exists in, which it became here much. Some they had this idea that these are demons out there and we are going to create our own complete world here with everything, the different castes. We will have the expert brahmanas who will then teach the rest of society how, you know, we'll be the intellectuals for the intellectuals of this lower society out there called Sweden. And here we are training up the kshatriyas, the real Vedic king, you know, who's going to come one day and just take over. And if nothing else, he will have to do it with the Kshatriya army, which we are going to train up. This way our society here will be the become the world. And there were discussions like that, I read them. Is Iskon going to become the world or lead the world? And well, whatever is the case, we have to be a bit practical and look at the situation of reality now. And I would say, it has been quite proven also by almost 60 years of experience of the Krishna Conscious Movement, that, well, doesn't seem like we are becoming a country to take over the whole world. In fact, the movement is struggling pretty much on coming up to the level of an ordinary, fairly well-run non-profit organization or church or whatever. And that's what many are now working for, trying to make it some kind of Hindu church or religion here that is then accepted by the governments. But maybe we should do it the way that I understand now, and you cannot speak to Adit and Bhagavan and others, the founders of the Krishna Conscious Movement in Sweden, who got that directly from their spiritual master, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, basically as instructions. You can just live in the society as people live here, dress that way and work, get yourself a job and have a home. But then you are devotees. And you will naturally speak to your friends about Krishna and look what books I have in my bookshelf and, you know, this dinner here, nice to have you, and this is vegetarian food, and yes, I have an altar here. I mean, it just comes naturally. And I remember when I was a new devotee, some of us were good at bringing others into, you know, to come to the temple and become interested in Krishna consciousness, like Revata Prabhu and others, forgot the name, who often lived out there in their hometowns, hanging out with their old friends, and but then talking about Krishna, you couldn't stop that, of course. And then let's go to the temple and stay there for a while. And that guy got out of his drug addiction or whatever and became a devotee. So, I mean, you don't need to have that, those big, fantastic properties and buildings and showing your great temple, and well, my temple is greater than the other guy over there, and you should come to me, and then you should donate to God here. Not to that God, to this God. And, you know, we need to learn from the past. So therefore, I'm, and others with me, and now we're talking these days like this. And if you ask me, I'd say that this is what, this is how it is now, really, isn't it? Most of us are just living in this society where we live in. And then there's a temple over there, maintained by some. And sometimes that temple is inviting us, and we're having good relationships, we feel welcome. Maybe they're doing projects. Maybe we are allowed to be members there, sitting together discussing projects, and then, well, we might also be interested in donating and pinching in, you know, to see those projects or visions come true. So, and I'd like to say that this, and also by experience, this is, seems to work. And if you study, and I haven't been abroad that much lately, but when I was in the US and in Britain and India, well, mainly I'm talking about the West here, because India is such a different scene. That's how it was in London, for instance. I lived just a little outside of Bhaktivedanta Manor there in Radlett. Most devotees lived there, had an apartment. I got one in a normal suburban little town-like place outside London. And in the US, I traveled around, met devotees. They had their homes all over, had their jobs. But then gradually had started to gather more on personal levels like that and doing things together. And, well, that's where we are today. And
that's where this guy is now. And I've been babbling for a while, so, wow, if you follow this, then thank you. And, well, there's comments down here and so on. Hare Krishna.